Blog Talk Radio.
We're coming to you live from Pizza Restaurant. How's everybody doing out there? We're still coming to you from two separate states, talking about a certain team known as.
How many more championships do you guys think we're going to predict, Vanderbilt?
Gentlemen, the only question is not will they repeat, but how many times?
You know, I don't think we're talking about a repeat, a three-peat, or even a four-peat.
That's right. We're talking a minimum eight-peat.
Ever in our entire history from the same location, Chicago IL, at the Laugh Factory on Belmont. Anyways, we got special guests with us this time, and I'm going to turn this over to Greg here for the intro, but we are officially from the same place for the first time ever.
Yeah, for sure. We got, they had us on, so we invited them on the Men in Scoring Position podcast. We got both of them on right now. So I guess to start things off, just go ahead and introduce yourselves and how you guys met each other and got the show started.
For sure. Yeah, thanks for having us on, guys. My name is Bill. I'm one of the co-hosts, obviously, along with my boy Travis over here. Travis, say what's up.
What's going on, guys?
So, we met actually 2 or 3 years ago. Oh, funny story about how we met, actually. Should I tell the story?
Absolutely.
Okay. So I was a lonely bouncer at a bar. And I saw this guy walking up, one earphone in. He's got a backwards visor flipped upside down. His collar's popped. Somehow his gel, his hair is spiked and bright yellow. And he walks up, and I go, "Hey,
Wait.
Man, how you doing?"
The 90s?
Yeah, I was going to say, what year was this again?
This was 2015, 2014.
1999?
2014, oddly enough, and he walks up, and I go, "Hey, how you doing, sir? Can I grab your ID?" And he just goes, "I work here," and he takes his Hawaiian shirt, he unbuttons one button, and shows me the Trader Todd's logo. Oh, excuse me, yeah, it's where I worked at, Trader Todd's. I do that every time. We worked at the bar, and I was like, "Okay, I guess you're allowed to come in."
Okay, guys, first off, thank you for having me. Second off, this is Travis. From Men in Scoring Position. As the years go on, this story gets more fab. But next thing you know, I have a puka shell necklace.
I forgot, did I not mention you had a puka shell necklace?
Did you mention my chain wallet, perchance?
JNCO jeans.
I had some airwalks that were like, one were bunny tied and one were undone, because that was a cool thing to do.
He was one strap in his JanSport.
One strap, yeah, with the 1 foot against the locker, with his Walkman in his pocket. For some reason, I always have a locker with me everywhere I go. But I just want to say thank you so much, guys, Primetime Profits, for having us on. We love when we had you guys on.
It's fun, though.
We're super excited for this, man.
Oh, that was a great podcast video. Was that yesterday?
We recorded it. I guess it was 2 days ago.
Yeah, absolutely. No, thank you so much for having us on. Yeah, I had a great time.
Stop trying to plug yourself on their podcast. This is their podcast.
Men in Scoring Position.
Listen, I mean, I can't thank you guys enough because, like, you brought us back from the dead. I mean, we've pretty much been, like, we resurrect once a year like a bad zombie apocalypse.
It
doesn't last very long. Yeah, maybe I guess that works, too, you know. I mean, if you want to be.
Yeah, so, like, we pretty much broke it down. The only times we do shows is if we have to complain about something or break because we got another thing right. That's it. Otherwise, we don't do shows.
Are there really any other times to do shows, though, guys?
No, not at all. Especially when you got a minimum 8 feet going. Our hopes rest on the Cubs, but
it's actually funny because, you know, our pick is the Cubs, but, like, honestly, we don't believe it can happen, but we really want to be as wrong as can be just to keep that streak alive.
A little bit more than Greg believes it, I think, but ultimately. I don't know. I mean, it all depends on my MLB The Show simulation as to whether I think we're going to win or not.
But also, too, I have to always choose against the Chicago teams because we are pessimistic, Punzo, and negative nerd.
Yes, it's true.
Such is how it goes.
Nerd, just because you guys are new, is my name backwards.
Oh, okay.
Most unoriginal thing.
I knew him for like 4 years, never figured out. And one day I was like, oh, nerd is actually Darren Backwards.
Really, only talk like every day.
How high were you guys? Or how high were you?
I was like raw vegan, as sober as it gets.
Oh, sober as a judge, raw vegan. Yeah. My life. I'm kidding. That's why I don't be seeing that.
That's why we're live from the Laugh Factory, folks.
But yeah, so I guess let's just get right into it. Straight to Cubs again. What thoughts you guys have on what's going on right now?
Okay. Obviously the game tonight, they won 8-1. That was great. I mean, at the, what was it, game 3 or 4, the Crosstown Classic, they won.
I just love how they throw Chapman in.
I think they were planning on throwing him in no matter what. They're up 3-1 and then 4-1, and they had Chapman warming up, and they're like, we got to give the people what they want, you know.
Yeah,
and they were
innovation.
Saying, crazy stat, I think we were just talking about this before that, that like since 2000 or something like that, Cubs pitchers had thrown a combined 12 pitches of 100 miles an hour. And Aroldis Chapman tonight threw 13 by himself of 100 miles an hour or more. I mean, that's some heat.
Dude, I was rizzing all over the place when I saw that.
Oh, nice.
You like that? You see what I did there? No, there's no O. I was just rizzing. It's an ejaculation.
If you want to be technical.
Just rizzing. No, man, dude, the Cubs, we're all Cubs fans here, man. It's been a little painful to watch the past couple of weeks. I think we were 12 wins out of 20 games or something, or 12 for 20. And that's not a World Series team, but tonight they showed promise. It's when they're home, they're fucking a force to be reckoned with. And now that we brought in Aroldis Chapman, man, this is looking really, really sexy. Javi did his thing tonight.
My boy Addison hit a grand slam.
Oh, yeah, Addison hit a grand slam.
Right there. That is my guy.
No, that's the thing. We've been preaching it from the get-go that there is so much buzz around this team, and everyone was saying 115, 110 wins. They're so rare that the teams go over 100 themselves. Last year they went 97. Of course, that's awesome. You always want to add a little more for the next year. But with injuries and with how long the season is, just with all the dumb luck that goes into – to 162 games, one bounce there, one bounce the other way, you know. I mean, if they went 95, I mean, that's a great effing season, you know. Like, that's a – can we curse on here?
Oh, absolutely.
That's a great fucking season, you know. Like,
best fucking season I've ever fucking heard.
You opened up the floodgates there, didn't we?
Yeah.
But, anyways, we actually got a caller right now if you want to take him.
This is Philly's friend.
This is my buddy. Yeah.
This is the one that tells us Rose wasn't the best point guard ever in 2011.
First off, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you so much.
So Magic Johnson brought the ball up the court. The offense ran through him. He called the plays. I'm pretty sure that constitutes a point guard.
God, man, you really got a hard-on for that, huh? We get it. You guys are not the six out there, man, but you come to the Midwest, that's a general consensus.
That Magic Johnson is not a point guard?
We were talking about that. We
point guard ever.
We looked up. We were looking up the definition of a point guard, and I got it.
You were looking up the definition of point guard.
Excuse me, I'm talking to. I'm talking
you
to,
didn't know.
I'm talking to Victor. Thank you very much. The backcourt player who directs the team's offense, right? So that makes sense in the case of that Lakers team.
I hate you.
But it could be a team, whoever directs that. I mean. Generally speaking.
Right. I mean, he brought the ball off the court and the offense ran through him, correct? And he called the plays? That's a point guard.
Right. So actually, prior to us recording, my argument was the fact that...
No, you have no argument. That's number one.
No, I have an argument. And my argument is that, generally speaking, like Byron Scott was on that team listed as what, 6'4"-ish is what we can look that up right now. Right, so that would have been the one position. But because the team flew through a 6'9", surefire top three, in my opinion, player of all time, then he ran point, quote unquote. So to me, the definition of point guard Byron Scott was 6'3"? Okay, so he's 6'3".
So just out of curiosity, does that mean, just by your definition, does that mean the tallest player has to be center? And then, like, the third tallest player has to be small forward, or does that not matter?
Let me ask you that question. I mean, would you consider a...
The classic redirect. Let me ask you the same question you just asked.
I watch Colin Coward for time.
Is this the
you should be Billy right now.
I'm trying to listen. I really have one pair of headphones.
Okay. So, I guess, yeah. For lack of a better, but what would you say? I mean, would you say that the point guard, or for instance, a 7-foot guy could run point?
I mean, Giannis Antetokounmpo is doing it right now. I think whatever position best suits that team and that player, that's what position they play. I don't think it should be relegated by how tall they are.
That's right. And you know, I got to be honest with you, man. That's what I've come to. But I feel like when it comes down to it, the 1 through 5 is an obsolete, it's like the two-party system. We've taken it to what it needs to be. Like, this is what it is. But, like, 1 through 5, like, it's been evolving. Now there's such thing as a stretch 4.
Nowadays with the whole, like, power forwards disappearing in general. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it's weird how, like, you can look at society now and there's that whole. Yeah, I've had a few beers. The whole gender fluid thing. That whole thing going on in the basketball court, it's reflecting, not that, I'm just saying it's a good example, that most positions now, I guess, you have guys like the Milwaukee Bucks are playing a system where no one really is 1 through 5. I mean, you have a general idea. Everyone's over 6'8", with 7-foot wingspan. So they're just kind of throwing out tall guys that can, you know, put hands out there and do whatever. And it's, I mean, I guess that makes sense now. I disagree with Travis on that one, obviously, wholeheartedly, that back in that day, despite the fact that he might have been 6'9", Magic Johnson was obviously the point guard.
Well, who did Magic guard in those days is the ultimate question. Did he guard the point guard?
He guarded 1 through 5.
I mean,
he guarded whoever they needed him to guard.
Oh, no, he had a triple-double. He played all 5 positions, had 42, 15, and 12.
He was a true universal.
Nick was – yeah, he was – dude, there's no denying. When you think of a guy that guards all the way through, then it's Magic. Or Robin. Robin guarded everybody. He didn't play.
He didn't score like Magic.
Yeah, he didn't, obviously. But I'm saying, like, the one guy that could guard the 1 through 5.
Should we just change the definition of point guard to the guy who sets everybody up and gets the assist?
I think we should get rid of the 1 through 5 all fucking together. I think it's confusing as fuck.
I really agree with that. I mean, when's the last time you really saw LeBron playing a 3? I mean, he almost orchestrates the offense every time.
He really played the – he plays the 1 and guards.
He plays the 1. Yeah, and that's the thing, too. Wasn't that on our last podcast we were talking about, there's no point guard-driven – there's no
never
like champion.
Yeah,
I forgot. 89 team with Magic, Kareem.
I was going to say,
so that was obviously
led the Pistons to a title, too.
What was that? Isaiah led to a title?
That's my point right there. Call him.
Isaiah's
one of
the best ever. Isaiah is in the top 5.
I was thinking about the only other one is like Jerry West. Like, if you look at the top, like,
Jerry West,
senior,
yeah,
like, top,
but he won 1 and 8, yeah. I mean, it's still good point.
Well, it's tougher for those little guys to lead an entire team. Like we were talking about on our last episode, was that nobody's talking about OKC being a contender. Because why? Because they don't have that big, dominant superstar, but they have a fucking superstar.
And they lost, like, the second best player in the league. But you went through the most dominant team in the West.
I saw what you did there.
Yeah, I mean, LeBron is the best player in the league. Let's be real. He's just not clutch. He's not clutch at all.
LeBron shoots.
Nick is saying right now that.
Are we on a delay right now?
No, I was being sarcastic. LeBron is absolutely clutch. What are you talking about? He has an amazing game 7 repertoire.
No, if there's one thing LeBron's known for, it's definitely last minute shots. What's that?
Yeah, actually, right now.
May I ask why last minute shots are the end all be all of quote unquote clutch? I mean, there's more aspects of the game than just that. Defense is defense, and clutch moments is very, very good. He's always making the right plays for the most part. Sure, he's turned the ball over, but who hasn't? I mean, I just don't – when you talk about clutch, isn't the whole game matter, or is it just that last shot?
Honestly, to me, I think it's a combination of both. It's how big is that game, the fourth quarter, especially in something like basketball. I think the fourth quarter is the most important, because you can start off great. It doesn't matter how great you start off. At the end of the day, it's how you finish, especially in NBA.
Like Steph Curry, he disappeared in the finals.
And Kyrie was more clutch than
No,
way
I
more clutch.
But,
hey,
you can look at game 6 against the Spurs in 2013, and LeBron turned it on in the fourth quarter. Like, he went fucking Greek god in that. But yeah, he missed the last shot that Ray Allen ended up making. But does that make him not clutch?
You're not allowed to have a hype man. Am I allowed to rebuttal without your girlfriend over here cheering you on?
Nope.
All right. Fine. All right, but I suck. You guys win.
But since we have better audio.
Okay, so basically the whole argument originally was about clutch. And I think first we have to start off whether or not clutch is a thing. Personally.
Clutch versus choke, right?
Personally, I believe clutch is not a thing. I think clutch is a continuation of performance that you have during the regular season or during the first three quarters of the game that carries on in the fourth quarter. I think you can, quote-unquote, fold under pressure or not live up to your statistical expectation, but I don't necessarily believe in clutch versus choke when it comes down to stats in the very end.
Okay, so you believe that you can fold under pressure, but you can't elevate during.
I do and I don't because
but then I'll have to have
no.
Yes,
listen,
no.
Because the last second shot is one shot. It's zero
out of
one.
Yeah,
I don't
exactly what
I'm talking about. Zero out of one or it's one out of one.
Clutch as in whether or not a shot goes in or not.
I agree.
That's what I'm saying.
I just feel like you guys jump directly from elevating to being last shot. There is a solid however many minutes, an elongated period of time to be clutch. You guys are associating clutch with a last second shot.
Well, like
you said, you would rather have JJ Redick or Kyle Korver take a last second shot
because they shoot 42 or 45%
right.
From three.
We're not arguing last second shots. We're arguing the general broad term of clutch. That's I just want to be clear on that. I'm not being a cocksucker.
Well, no. And
or
what
maybe
I
am. I don't know.
To be fair,
you did keep pressing the who would you rather have take the last shot, LeBron or Kobe or LeBron or Jordan.
So it's trying to
no,
react.
No, I would piggyback that absolutely. If I direct quoted that, then that's a no brainer, Kobe all day. But I get what you're saying. I for the confusion, I apologize. That being said, let me retract for a second. You both are, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that both you, Nick, and Billy are saying that there, in your opinion, is no such thing as clutch, but for some reason you both agree that there is a choke, so to speak, quote unquote.
Well,
so let's get back to the clutch
okay,
aspect
the
of it.
Okay, the argument would be, and I agree with Nick on this one, whether or not clutch
looks
means,
directly.
What exactly clutch means. And
what exactly clutch means, sure.
So what?
Exactly
what I guess
the
easy definition of clutch is whether or not he makes that last second shot.
I don't believe that. See, I feel
no,
like
that's,
you're.
That's
I feel
the layman's
like
term. That's the.
No, no,
that's
no, no.
The ESPN.
Yeah, that's
always
like
the ESPN.
Season.
That's not what
shit
I'm
like
saying.
Yeah. Or well,
that's a hop, skip, and a jump
like,
away from what
yeah,
I'm
yeah, it's
asking.
Like it's like that plus a like sort of like a takeover ability. Like can you take over a game at the end of the fourth? So it's not like a predetermined.
End of the fourth.
Yeah,
end of the fourth is not last second shot.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not like a predetermined like oh within 3 minutes he plays good because it, you know that's why I hate stats. Because,
or when it matters most, it doesn't
matter. Right,
hold on, so
time out. If we're gonna classify like last minutes of a fourth quarter, I would say
but I'm not
classifying
probably
the most clutch player
ever.
See,
but I'm not classifying it stats because then you run into problems. I'm classifying it by like takeover ability. First off, like the game has to be close. It can't be garbage time, and the game can't be oh they're already up by a bunch anyways and they're just closing it out. So it has to be like some sort of a close game, and they're single-handedly taking over. You know, they're scoring all the points for their team. They're playing you know intense defense. They're doing things that don't even show up on stats. You know, just stepping up the level of game in general. You know, their level of effort.
So then, so what percentage of players can you say, quote unquote, can be clutch? Because what you're saying is almost a superhuman level of ability to play both offense and defense and do things on the stat and off the stat book and in person and online and you know and during the commercial break.
Michael Jordan like pretty much sums up everything.
So Michael Jordan is the end all be all. There's no one who can ever be Michael Jordan again.
That's
the
perfect definition.
For you, right?
Slightly because I think statistically there's players who have come close to him and you can make that argument. And I think it's tough because I didn't grow up in 90s Chicago. I didn't grow up here. So it's like I didn't have that same experience. So anything that you love, you're going to defend,
right?
You know, with all your heart. And I think it's tough to try to argue with that because you can't, you know?
Right.
So it's something that you feel versus something that.
Can we also agree, by the way, especially in fourth quarter situations and pressure games, that LeBron is always asked to do more than pretty much any other NBA player ever?
Because Magic Bird and Michael Jordan ruined our perception of how you're supposed to perform late
right.
in the games.
Right, and not only that, media, but let's pull back for a second. Let's break everything down to its rarest form, right? We go down these fucking rabbit holes as sports fans. Let's retract for a second. My man Darren is just killing it right now. My thing is that I want to go on record saying that LeBron James is the most over scrutinized, most microscopic, if that's even a word in terms of what I'm referring to, player in the history of sports. Jim Thorpe is this like amazing figure lost in translation because exactly that, he's lost in translation. But because LeBron James has been in the technological age and everybody is just ramming him down my throat, your fucking throat. If the guy takes a shit in the wrong bathroom, it's on ESPN within 30 seconds flat or less, right? That, to me... And the fact that he has never been in major legal trouble, he's never been suspended, to the best of my knowledge.
He's been with the same woman.
He's been with the same woman. He has the same kids. Outside of the fact that he's a fucking uneducated asshole that bricks for about 7-8 years, he is the epitome of everything that you want outside of when he talks. He plays the game the way that you want it to be played. He is
so top. Does it upset you then? Because you said a couple podcasts ago, me and you, Men in Scoring Position podcast. Sorry, have to plug it real quick. Men in Scoring Position
do a quick plug?
Podcast. You said, I have to give it to you. This is your words. I have to give it to you, Billy. I'll put LeBron in the top 10. Does it upset you that you have to, quote unquote, put LeBron in the top 10?
Not because of guys like you. It because of fans. True fucking you, Nick. Whoever else is out there. I don't know Nick. I know from listening to Nick that he knows well enough that he's a fucking fan.
Yeah.
He's not a fucking bandwagoner. Does it pain me? Sure. Is it embedded in my DNA as a Chicago through and through fan? Yes, but he's earned his place. And in my fucking humble, no-name opinion, he's a beast. My top three are still going to be the white guy, your guy, and my guy. That's it.
and also, too, adding to that, you have to
and
do
Kobe's
everything.
Four.
Like everything perfect. You know, you can't do this wrong or that wrong. You'd be totally scrutinized. Michael Jordan adds to that, and he would, like, have nightmares of, like, you know, one night he's actually drinking, and he says one stupid thing and then loses all the sponsors. It's like you just make one little mistake.
If Mike was in today's game, and Mike pulled a quarter of the shit that he pulled, he'd be known as a
Cleveland
cheat.
He'd be like
Draymond
fucking.
Oh yeah, no
up,
doubt. Are you? He was saying he'd be hated worse than Draymond Green even.
Well, Draymond's no okay on the level of hate.
Oh, yeah,
on the level of hate, Draymond's not even there. You know, it goes. LeBron is the most hated fucking player. Ron Artest, maybe.
Yeah,
but
largely for unreasonable reasons,
yeah.
I guess. I mean. You can't hate the guy because of his game. Like, you just can't. You know, I mean,
right.
I guess you can hate him for his quote-unquote flopping, even though everybody does it. But, I mean, everybody, hates him mostly for the decision, right?
Well, no, you got to let that go.
Or
being
jammed down everybody's throat.
I'll just say from my perception, it's the decision for one, and then also the second thing would be, even though, you know, we'll disagree all day, is the whole, I'll just say he doesn't – He doesn't take over and say, like, okay, F all you teammates, F everything. I'm just going to win this game all by myself. Okay, I'll just say as often as other players. That and then, like, you know, the way he won this finals, which kind of, you know, I almost lost my hate for LeBron. But then when he was down 3-1 and he got Draymond suspended, basically by whining to the media to get Draymond suspended for games in the past, that's what rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah, but Phil Jackson did that with the refs, you know, during the 90s. So
but he didn't get anybody suspended for games he did in the past when he was down 3-1.
But would you argue that getting a person suspended for the game versus getting the calls throughout the game? I mean,
if you look at that thing, basically LeBron shoves Draymond Green and walks over him, and somehow Draymond gets suspended
punching him in the ball?
He hit him in the ball.
Stop hitting people in the ball. Stop trying to walk over somebody.
If you're Draymond Green, just stop hitting people in the ball.
Oh, no, yeah, for the Thunder, absolutely. And me, like, I thought he should have been suspended.
He should have been
suspended
for the Steven Adams thing.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Yeah,
but not for the LeBron thing, because LeBron served it by walking over him.
Okay, so then do you get upset then?
But the NBA kind of had to, because at that point they're like, okay, this is ridiculous.
Well, they had to because they had a finals that was going to end in five.
So then do you get upset when the Suns, when Amari Stoudemire gets suspended versus the Lakers against the Spurs, because Amari Stoudemire takes one step outside of the bench. He goes outside the paint, and they lose the series. They're up 3-2. They lose the series because they lose their best player, Amari Stoudemire. Are you
sure.
mad about that?
Sure, I would be mad about that.
I'm just saying that players get suspended. You know, it happens, especially when a guy who in the last series was so lauded for kicking someone in the nuts.
See, and this is the whole, you know, NBA conspiracy thing, and that they didn't suspend him, you know, for the games before because the Thunder were already up 3-1, and that would put him over the top, and they'd win in five versus against the Cavs. Okay, so now they're down. So let's, you know, like sort of take this in comparison, let's take this minuscule thing against LeBron and put it on top of all these things in the past, and then, oh, my God, this guy's awful. Let's suspend him now.
If you get too many flagrants during the playoffs, you get automatically
exactly.
suspended.
Exactly. I mean, there's a level of escalation,
so,
just like in the justice system, where it's like whether or not your third penalty may be you steal $10 from someone versus
yeah,
your first two are bank robbery, your third one's always going to be worse because you're a repeat offender. I mean, that's how our system works.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's just the
My daddy never loved me.
Just the thing that I didn't like about it is that obviously it was done because of being down 3-1. That's basically why it's not.
I mean,
you
can make that justification, but at the same time, they never would have had a case had he not done it two times previously. I mean, you can be like, okay, maybe once it was an accident, maybe twice, but three times, like, that's ridiculous. And you got to throw something out there.
But you don't think that he should have been suspended on site
for Steven Adams, absolutely.
I totally agree with you.
Right.
Totally,
I'm sorry, I'm playing catch up. Are we still not talking about Draymond's nut kicks?
We're talking about his nut punches.
So
I like how there's two separate things. Are we talking about his nut kick? No, we're talking about his nut punch. So a guy who's hitting people in the nuts.
He likes karate.
But I
wanted to be named Jason because I watched the Power Rangers.
Yeah, no,
is
no,
that
no,
evil
I,
in me?
I guess my problem is just the inconsistency and the clear, you know, NBA's agenda, I guess, or whatever, just to make the playoffs more exciting and not sort of making decisions like that based on what actually happened instead of, you know, being like, okay, we'll let this slide, and then, oh, we're down 3-1. Okay, now we're going to come down on you hardcore. I guess it's my biggest problem is the inconsistency and also LeBron turning to that.
You don't think Jordan would do that? Jordan would have done that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, he fucking did it to Ewing.
LeBron, no. Jordan, like, would just
Pistons,
take Bose
though.
To the fucking face,
yeah,
windmill jam, and then hit a three, and then hit the third point and won.
I mean, he complained, but he did.
Dude, how do you guys defend him getting smacked by Tristan Thompson? Defend that, please.
No, but
please
finish off the Jordan thing. He basically did that versus
Tristan Thompson
the Pistons.
Turned around,
he got his way just by getting over it and just powering through rather than. I mean, he complained too, but he didn't get his way.
I was gonna say you don't think Jordan complained to the refs? Watch those.
Yeah, absolutely. But he still defeated the Pistons while getting like punched in the face every time he drove.
And in the nuts, and in the fucking obliques, and a lot of other muscles that we don't have. You know?
And he just overcame it. Versus,
so,
I mean, he still complained.
It's a different,
sure.
That's a different era, right? I argue the 90s. I'm like that old man. Like, this isn't music.
No, I remember.
But at the end of the day, when on the spot, fucking LeBron just comes out of the pack like the biggest big brother, and then he gets tapped in the face by his own teammate, Tristan Thompson, who's listed as a center, but he's still smaller than LeBron. And then LeBron takes 17 steps back, man. It's comical. You can't defend it.
Yeah, speaking of comical, my favorite moment was when he flopped so hard he ran in the cameraman and hurt himself.
Yeah.
One of my personal faves. No, just
or when Bosh and Wade were going at it, and then Jakeem, my personal favorite troll, is just over there like,
Oh my God, I was so livid when that happened. I gotta say,
dude, but if you were a Bulls fan, you would have loved it.
Memory.
Come on, man. If you were a Bulls fan, you would have loved that.
No, oh, I'm sure. Joakim Noah has to be the ultimate, like, you hate him unless he's on your team.
Oh, okay. Man.
Come on, Birdman.
Oh, Chris Anderson?
I think I'll see all these guys.
Lance Stevenson. Come on, buddy.
Oh, Lance Stevenson might be the worst.
Holy shit, that guy sucks. Talking about the trying to argue different eras, I remember I got into these dumb Facebook arguments, and my buddy posted something on Facebook. And I was talking about the 80s Celtics and 80s Lakers, and he goes, dude, that was 30 years ago. And I was just like, I got nothing.
Did you sometimes get
But in my head, I'm just like, oh, that was 20 years. Oh, that was 15 years ago. Like, oh, all right. You know?
Dude, let's just put things in perspective right now. 1996 was 20 years ago.
Oh, boy. Checking IDs, too, at the fucking club, and they're like, 1995. I was like...
When were you in the club?
In this club. In the comedy club. Laugh Factory.
I really don't see you cutting a rug, just turning up.
Yeah, cutting a rug, no, but I turn up.
Because I turned out for what?
Yeah.
Yeah, the most depressing thing as a server or bartender, you like check someone's ID and you're like, 95, you're not fucking old enough. I'm going to do the math real quick.
I consistently, on a night-by-night basis, I think about just putting my head through a plate glass and just letting it fucking bleed out. You know, I'm like, wait a minute, 95, 90. I think it's about to be 96.
True.
Yeah, that's why.
Yeah, now look at dude.
Yeah, let's just end it all.
Dude, your beard just got even grayer.
Fuck it. Yeah, no, to end it
all. Care
people
about
born
it.
In 2001 are driving right now with their 15 and a half, you know, law or whatever. People born in 2001 are out there driving.
Yeah.
The craziest thing ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
They didn't even know what Y2K is.
I know.
That's horrible.
Or even witness 9/11 or know anything about it. I mean, that's probably even the people who drank. Like, they have no clue or what even happened. I had a teacher who I say, you know, every class, like, they know less and less, you know, because obviously it comes up in history and they're like, oh, so what's your memories or whatever? And then now it's like nothing. That's just...
Well, you old bitch, you have no memories. I'm kidding, guys. She's not old. You get older, and then next thing you know, you're like, "Oh my God, I'm my fucking father." Kidding. NFL. So Nick, you're a big Bucks fan.
Indeed, I am. Yes.
You want to break them down for us, layman's over here?
Well, I mean, I guess I'll start out. Billy's actually the one that got me into the Bucks. I never really cared much for the NFL. I was always a Florida State football college football fan. And right about the time I met Billy, he introduced me to, I think Mike Allstott was my first person I was exposed to. He, like, he had trading cards, and so kind of always liked the Bucks ever since because I never liked the Dolphins.
Billy, is there any validity to his story?
Oh, this is 100% true, baby. Mike Allstott, man, coming out of Purdue University in 1995. Second round pick, number 37 overall.
Do you remember his high school? Because I do.
Joliet.
That's right.
What's his middle name?
It's
got to be something like Joseph,
I think
maybe.
It's Jesus. If I had to
it's
guess.
It's
got to
be something super Catholic.
It could be white Jesus. It could be just bull.
Is it don't touch me? Is it Mike don't touch me Allstott?
Let's get the fuck out of my way.
Don't fuck you.
Mike Fumble Allstott?
What is his middle name? Do you know, or does anyone know?
No, no one knows.
No, I was just testing his knowledge.
No, literally nobody knows. Nobody knows.
Nobody cares.
That's rude.
That's arguable.
Am I
too straightforward?
No. No, it can't be.
It's vice versa. Nick got me into the Seminoles growing up, the Semis, the Seminoles in the 90s. Those are some great teams, man. The Peter Warwicks, Lavernius Coles, Chris Wankies.
Lavernius Coles.
All those
yep.
guys.
Oh, I was right. It's Michael Joseph Allstott.
Nice.
American hero Benedict Arnold proud and turncoat into the University of Florida.
I don't think it was as bad as spying on my own country for the benefit of an overlord nation. But yeah, something along those lines.
I think they're comparable.
So prior to that, you really didn't have an NFL team?
No. Actually, my Family was never really into the NFL, so pretty much only watched college football at that time and a little bit of NBA. And then, once I started watching the Bucks, I really liked them.
Now
and it was a good time to be a Bucks fan.
You're a Florida kid through and through. Were you right? I'm assuming like you were born and raised.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
When the Magic hit the lottery 2 years in a row, did you piggyback that or no?
No, not at all.
No,
I'm a Heat guy. Don't care about the Magic.
Okay. I don't think even the whole town of Orlando cared about the Magic. I lived in Daytona for 8 years.
I can tell you, I lived in Orlando for 4 years, and no one cared.
No one gave a shit.
No, because no one that lives in Orlando is from Orlando.
And the way Orlando's civil engineered, I guess, is the word. Terrible, man.
Yeah,
like,
we get it. You got
there's
Church
no
Street.
One that lives downtown, and if they do, it's like a couple thousand people. It's a 20 to 30 minute drive, if not more than that,
from the beach.
Via toll road to get to the I think it's Amway Arena. So Bucks, we were talking a little bit about them earlier. What's your opinion about us, as in Tampa Bay Buccaneers, firing Lovie Smith and promoting Dirk Cotter from OC to head coach?
I thought that was absolutely ridiculous. I was very excited when we first got Lovie Smith. I was actually surprised and even more shocked when I heard that we fired him. How you can fire someone after just signing a potentially franchise quarterback in his rookie year. The guy, Lovie Smith, was only there for 2 years. I think it's insane that any professional team would give someone with Lovie Smith's background and experience only 2 years to work on a completely rebuilt team. To just get rid of him is ridiculous. I mean, continuity is almost always successful in professional sports, and for whatever reason, it seems like teams are getting further and further away from that.
Yeah, first off, I just want to say I've never heard the words Lovie Smith and excited in the same sentence in my life. But going through that with his background, like honestly, all he's really done is lost a Super Bowl. But for the rebuilding, I totally get it, because for a coach to rebuild, that's kind of what the Bears are doing right now with John Fox. We don't really know if he's a Super Bowl coach or not, but for rebuilding, it's great. And same thing with Lovie Smith. And, yeah, I feel like it seems like right as they're about to turn that corner or as they were turning that corner, they just let him go out of nowhere. Now they almost have to start the rebuilding process all over again because you got Freeman, the quarterback, who made a connection with them, and they seem to get along. It seemed like, you know, next year looked like that was going to be their year in terms of the NFL timeline.
What would you say, though, that there's a comparison, an apt comparison between Lovie Smith and John Fox, and the fact that both, as you eloquently put, Lovie Smith only lost the Super Bowl. Same with John Fox, a man who lost Super Bowl, who was the defensive first run offensive guy. Would you say there's an apt comparison or no?
In terms of those two people in particular, yeah. But in terms of the defense running the ball, not exactly, because you know you got like 2,000 Ravens. Like obviously it can be done. The only question is if their style to be done can work.
Yeah.
You know, there's another side note. There's another correlation between those guys that get so close, you know, because then there's like the offensive perspective of it with like the Andy Reids, you know, the always a bridesmaids, Marv Levy's, you know, the guys that when you think about their, I mean, I guess Marv Levy had a pretty solid defense, right? You know, with Bruce Smith and Spider-Man arm, I can't, Lawrence Towning or whatever his name was. Anyway, you know, when you think about him, you think about the Andre Reeds, you think about the Jim Kellys, you think about the Donovan McNabb, the TOs, Brian Dawkins might have been your one defensive player. So I don't know, man. You think about those always
in terms of people who just
he's always the bridesmaid coaches.
Oh, I see.
I mean, I just find it funny that I'm living up here. Everyone was so pro getting rid of Lovie Smith and hiring this Trestman guy. Oh, he's the future. Oh, you know, he's got this exciting offense and blah, blah, blah. Then what happens? You get rid of him, and you go back to a guy who's a defensive first coach, who's a professional, you know, he's a guy who's been a playoff coach, a guy who, as I just said before, has been to the Super Bowl but never won the big game. I just find it funny that you guys are super excited about a guy who seems like you're going back to where
you just
were.
It was a hype train, man, because I don't regret for a second, even hindsight, getting rid of Lovie. Lovie had to go. It's the same thing with, like, Thibs. Like, everybody's like, oh, my God, you got rid of Thibs. Thibs ran him ragged. Thibs couldn't get past your boy. You know?
Was that more his situation was stagnant or and he just kind of ran his course there? Or you
who's
just
that?
Like,
are you talking
Lovie
about
Lovie? In general. Both, I guess.
Well, Thibs wasn't as severe as Lovie. With Lovie, like, we looked at, and I remember we were doing a fantasy draft at a Lovie bar that Billy and I used to work at.
A Lovie bar.
Lovely bar. And literally Al Larcher, I don't know if you listened to that episode, he goes to Bourbon A every, we're all pretty diehard Bears fans. We all were like, you can have him. You know, and what he did with you guys, he's a rebuilder. He's not a Bill Parcells where he might hoist a Lombardi at some point. What he's going to do, he's going to get you to about 8-8, 10-6 at best. And then it's at some point you're going to decline, but he's kind of left the blueprint, and then you go from there. Now, I know outside looking in perspective, you look at 06 and you're like, well, Lovey was the man, and you look at Thibs and, you know, the run that we had with him. But at the end of the day, that was it. It's like a bad marriage. You just got to know when to call it quits.
I think the difference, though, with Thibs is the question of, did we have enough talent to get past LeBron versus Lovey? I think it's clear that we did have enough talent at points. Because to me, with Tom Thibodeau, especially after he left, you saw how truly talented that team was the following year. We went from almost winning the finals and not even making the playoffs. When Lovey Smith left, or even before he left, we were already struggling. So I guess the difference there is the question of, do we have enough talent, but Tom Thibodeau couldn't do it, wasn't quite answered. That's what I think. That's the difference in terms of why we should have kept Thibs and questioned Garpax more than we should have fired Lovey.
Yeah. Nick, Billy, do you guys have like a similar situation throughout the history of the Tampa, any franchise, I should say?
The obvious correlation would be Tony Dungy, a guy who brought us brought us to the NFC Championship game 1 year. He was a playoff coach for 4 or 5 years. The year that we fire him, John Gruden comes over and wins the Super Bowl. I mean, there's always that argument that you're waiting for that one coach, just like the Warriors did when they got rid of Mark Jackson, a guy who they won 50-something games with him. They made the playoffs. They fire him next year. They win the championship with Steve Kerr. But that's so rare that happens. I always find that funny whenever teams are constantly looking for that one coach. Like, oh, we just need a game changer. They bring in a guy from college, or they bring in a guy from whatever who's a revolutionary guy, and they regress so fucking much.
Real quick, Billy,
I forget. Are you in the camp that obviously it was Dungy's team that Gruden coached to – win the Super Bowl, but are you in the camp of like, well, Gruden just piggybacked on it, or he was actually the one to help get us over the hump?
I would say that Gruden's offense with his West Coast style and his ability to bring in the players such as Joe Giravicius and Ken Dilger.
Fucking, can we side note? I love. I have always loved Joe Giravicius.
I mean, he was a.
Oh my God.
John Gruden was a quote unquote sexy coach to play for, so he's getting these veterans that come in. Keenan McCardell. He was getting these guys that eventually helped us so much on offense because of his charisma, because people wanted to play in his offense because they saw what happened in Oakland and you know, the stats had to put up. And we already had that defense that he put in, and Lovie Smith was linebacker's coach. No, he's defensive. Monty Kiffin was defensive coordinator. We had Lovie Smith on that staff. We had Herm Edwards on that staff. We had Rod Marinelli on that staff. That was a great coaching staff. I just think we need a little spark on offense. And as I usually disagree, as I was just saying, with bringing in a new head coach, especially for a team that's proven year after year to make the playoffs, we lost the year before in the NFC Championship. No, sorry, 99, we lost the NFC Championship game to the Rams, who were known for their defense. I think it was 11-5, something along those lines. So
This is all off the top.
Bringing in John Gruden was definitely one of the few times.
No notes included, folks.
Bringing in John Gruden was definitely was the thing I think that brought us over the top. But generally, as I was saying before about stats and all that, statistically speaking, it's very rare that you bring in a new head coach and they spark it and they win, you know, like that.
Nick, I want you to reiterate everything Billy just said right now. That's impressive, buddy. I'm a huge sports fan.
Yeah.
But even I couldn't just rattle off stats and numbers. And we're going to check the validity of that.
Instead of it's true.
Oh, this is, it was 5-11, and Jerry Vicious was with the Browns, and I don't know.
I got tingles listening to that. I'm going to be honest.
Hey, we're recording, right? Can we check the validity of it?